Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the What We Said podcast featuring Chelsea
and JC. We're rolling live. So guys, we're kicking off this episode with last week. We said that we're going to try and share like some kind of quote or something that has stuck out to us. We both spend a lot of time on Pinterest and stuff like that. And so
quotes are everywhere. They're floating around everywhere.
Yeah. So we're like, we should just pick a quote that we like or something that someone said to us that stood out to us and just share as like a little snippet of inspiration for you guys.
Something that they said.
I'm cutting that out. We're going to do that at the beginning of this episode. We did it at the end of last week's episode, but we don't really have like a designated name for it or whatever, but we'll figure that out eventually.
Yeah, someday.
So Chelsea, do you want to share yours first?
Yes.
A quote or something that you liked?
So I like this quote. It's called. it says, "Sometimes God will give you exactly what you wanted just to show you it's not at all what you needed."
That's so good.
Yeah, and I really actually love that quote because I think almost everyone has probably had an experience where that has happened to them.
They've wanted
something for so long and then they get it and then they realize
that it's not what they wanted.
Oh, this is not going to make me happy. Like, oh, I want a house so bad someday. And then they like own a house. They're like, oh, I'm not happy because of my house.
Right.
I think it's just kind of pertaining to anything that you have like that's of worldly value or materialistic or even just things that don't really matter.
Or it could even be a person in your life that, you know, someone that you want to date so bad and then you date them and you're like, wait, no.
It's so true. There have been people where I'm like crushing on them so hard in high school or right when I graduated and then I'd go on a date with them and like
be like,
and just like, oh, why did I put so much effort into this?
Like, no, it's clearly not what
yeah,
I need.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I think that's really good. It's pretty straightforward. This quote I really like. I've seen it a lot. It's something that stood out to me this week. It says, so the quote, well, I'll just say it first. So it says, never take advice from people who aren't where you want to be.
Mm.
And I kind of like to flip it around because I feel like that quote is kind of negative. Like, only take advice from people who are where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I think of it. And it's just so true. I feel like I've wasted so much energy and so much time listening to opinions of people who aren't where I even want to be in life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, putting...
I heard like stomping and I just thought like something was happening and I didn't even flinch.
We're in awesome.
So that's how tired I am.
We're at Leif's parents' house and Chelsea and I are recording in their office and it's dark, it's nighttime, and I just see this like flashlight shine into the window and then Leif's face appear.
Scary.
It actually scared me, but anyway, we're good. All is well. Okay, so what I was saying was, can't even remember. I feel like I've just wasted energy or time, like, listening to people who I'm like, why am I taking your advice when you are not where I want to be in life at all? Yeah,
exactly. And it's not even necessarily, it's not even necessarily, like, what occupation they have or, like, how successful necessarily they've been, per se, but, like, what state of mind they're always
in. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Not like, oh, they have my dream job, but more just like, are you a kind of person that I would want to be like? Mm-hmm. If not, why the heck am I taking your advice?
Yeah, exactly.
You know those people that like are kind of all talk, they're like, you just need to be doing this and this and this, but it's like, it's not actually working for them in their life.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean?
So I feel like it's a good reminder to, I've seen this too, where people will have like a sticky note or something with like five people written on it whose opinion they really value and like who they hold closest to them. I don't know really what the whole like idea behind it is exactly, but kind of like those are the people who you've, basically, whose opinion you value. I guess I already said
that. Yeah.
So it's like, if you're not on my sticky note, then like, I don't really
care.
You know,
that's
what
a good
you think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's like kind of
that.
A good way to think about it. But jumping into the episode, today we have a very special guest with us. Her name is Abby Lindblom. She is from Gilbert, which is where Chelsea and I grew up. And Gilbert,
where we currently are.
Yeah, Gilbert, Arizona. Okay, why did I just like gasp my Gilbert. And Abby has had, she's gone through a lot in her life already. She's our age, so she's 23 years old. And she has just gone through some crazy stuff in her life. She has been a victim of abuse growing up. And unfortunately, about a year and a half ago, her mom passed away due to a drug addiction. So she just shared her story with us. And she was very vulnerable and really didn't leave much out. I mean, she was really open about everything, which I think is awesome and super brave of her. But she just told us all about her experience growing up and kind of what she's turned her life into now, which is a really beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
We just really, we loved hearing from her and having her on the podcast. So we're super excited to let you guys hear it and for you guys to take it all in.
And Abby has done something really inspirational and really amazing with a shop she now owns. So it's a clothing boutique, and she donates 10% of each purchase to, it's called NCADD. It's in Phoenix, Arizona, and it's a rehab recovery program for women, specifically with drug addiction. Her shop is called Shop Fidelity. So if you go to shopfidelity.co, that's shopfidelity.co, not com. And if you type in the code, what we said, you get 15% off. And so she's giving that to you guys, our listeners. So again, if you go on her site and you go shopping, you can get 15% off if you type in the code, what we said.
And I have a few of her dresses. She sent me a few weeks back, and I got so many compliments on them. They're just really cute and comfy.
Yeah.
And yeah, she has some good stuff. So make sure to check that out. It's fun to be able to give you guys discount codes.
Yeah. And it's fun to be able to like direct you to things that we
are
passionately about and things that have such great causes and like the why behind them. It's so awesome to hear about them.
Yeah. So definitely check that out, and we're just going to jump right into the episode and let you guys get to know Abby. What's up, guys?
Hello, hello.
We are here with Abby. We're here live, coming at you.
Hello.
And Abby, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself for the viewers at home? Just kind of tell
viewers.
Us, or the listeners. just kind of tell us what you like to do, where you live, just a little bit about you.
Fun stuff about you.
Yeah.
So I'm married to David. Our last name's Lindblom. And we live in Gilbert. And we bought a house in Gilbert about 5 months ago. But we were both raised in Mesa. He went to Mesa High. I went to Mountain View. And then we moved out to Gilbert. And I do hair at Mint Salon. And then I own a clothing boutique. And then my husband works at an insulation company.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Wait, how and when did you guys meet?
We met, how long ago was that? Like 5.5 years ago or 5 years ago.
Okay.
We got set up on a blind date.
Were you still in high school or were you graduating?
I just graduated.
Okay.
Yeah. And he had just gotten home from an LDS mission for our church. And one of his best friends met one of my best friends on the app that was super popular, Tinder. And
oh, yes.
So they wanted to go on a date. And then they wanted to set up a huge group date between their two friends. And so my friend called me and said, this guy David's going to pick you up. I'm like, what the heck? Like, I've never been on a blind date in my life.
Yeah, that's and so funny. That's how I met Leif, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he comes and picks me up, and I recognized his truck because it was the truck that one of my friends drove in high school. And I'm like, hey, that's my friend Jeffy's truck. And he's like, that's my brother. I'm like, oh. So I was friends with his brother before I even knew him. So that kind of like gave us a connection a little bit. And we went cliff jumping at the lake at night. So I thought I had to be like all cool and jump off like the high cliffs, yeah, even though I would never do that now. But I totally did to like impress him.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, that's how we met.
Sweet. And then you guys, you said you bought a house in Gilbert.
Yes.
So have you like, I've lived in my, well, we didn't buy our house, we're renting, but I've lived there for over a year and it's like still not even decorated at all. Is your house like decorated yet, or are you still in the process
of I'm surprised that I do have it decorated.
Really?
Like,
that's impressive.
We lived in my dad's guest house for the first two and a half years that we were married. And at the end of that is when we started like looking for houses and stuff. Actually, we looked for a house for like a year and we couldn't find one. And we were being super picky because it's not like we were like getting kicked out or anything.
Yeah.
But then we finally found this house, and when we put an offer, they accepted it right away. And so at that point, I started looking for furniture, and I would just order it and like ship it to my dad's house and keep it there. So I kind of like had everything like
gradually.
Yeah, like lined up. So then when we moved in, we just brought it and like had it all in there. And my cousin is an interior designer, and so I would always like be texting her, like, and she would send me links to things and I would just buy it. And so she was really helpful. So it helped me do it really fast. Yeah. So it's pretty much all decorated. Yeah.
That's so nice. Awesome. I know. I'm forgetting. Oh, yeah. I went to my friend's house the other day and she lived there for like 8 months and it was like 1,000% decorated. I'm like, wait, am I just like the slowest person
wait,
in the world?
Wait, your house is decorated?
Yeah. I like change my mind a lot. So I'll be like, eh, I'm kind of bored of that. And then I want to sell it and get something else. Or I don't know. It takes me a long time to finish a room fully.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I feel like you never feel like you're done. Like you can always be like, oh, this can be changed. Or I can put this here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that's totally true. So it's taken me a million years and I'm still not even done. Yeah. But we'll get there.
I was going to say, I feel like your house is completely decorated.
You're kidding. Have you seen my office? It's heinous.
Well, that's an office.
Yeah. We're getting there.
Plus, we turned it into a podcast studio.
True.
Out of nowhere. So,
yeah. Okay, Abby. So, tell us about your childhood. So, where you grew up and kind of just that whole thing.
So, I grew up, I actually was born in Scottsdale. And I lived there for probably like till I was four, so like 4 years. And then we moved to Mesa, and that's the house that I was raised in and grew up in. I have an older brother and a younger sister. So I'm in the middle and there's three of us and we're all 2 years apart. And I feel like I don't really remember anything before I was six, but because my parents got divorced when I was six. And so I feel like that was like a big moment in my life. And then that's when I kind of started remembering, I don't know. I don't know why.
Things. Having memories.
No, yeah. We were just talking about this before because my parents divorced when I was young too. And I honestly don't remember how old I was, which is weird. I feel like I should remember that. But I think I was maybe four or something. And I, maybe five, I don't know. But it's weird because I have like no memory up until that point. I feel like even, I don't know. Even
like you never remember your parents being together.
No.
Yeah.
Not so at all. Crazy. It's weird. And I don't even really have that many memories of being like five and six and seven, or I don't know, from when I was young. I remember Leif saying something like, oh yeah, when I was five, we did this. And I'm like, you remember that? I don't know
that
if
is
that's
crazy.
Like childhood trauma or just like if that's normal. Anyway, so I get what you mean.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I think even I will have a memory, quote unquote, but then I think, did someone just tell me that that happened? And so I think I remember it.
Yeah. Like
or like I'll see a picture or watch it like a home video. And so I'm like, oh yeah, that was my memory. And I'm like, wait, do I actually remember that?
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know.
So yeah, when I was six, my parents got divorced and my mom would live in our house for a week and my dad would go stay in a hotel and then they would switch off. Wow. That was in between because divorce is a long process. And so it was in between. So they're like separated. And the week that my mom was living there, my mom's whole family came and they had like trailers and their trucks and everything and loaded all of her stuff up and moved it to a ranch in Scottsdale that my mom and my dad had bought in. And there was a house on the ranch too. So she went and moved all of her stuff to the ranch. And I feel like that's when I really, I mean, because as a young kid, it's hard to understand things, but I visually saw her take her stuff and take it to another house. And so I feel like that's when I really realized, like, okay, they're getting a divorce. My mom's going somewhere else and they're not going to be together anymore. Mm-hmm. So then the divorce became final and we would live at the ranch for a week and then at my dad's house in Mesa for a week. And the ranch was in North Scottsdale. So my mom would drive us to school. That was in Mesa. It'd take us an hour to get to school every day. And I lived on the ranch for like 4 or 5 years. And I feel like it wasn't until like the very end, like maybe the last 2 years, that I started realizing that things were kind of weird, that she was being strange and that she was making like weird decisions.
Wait,
I don't know.
Lived with your mom on the ranch? Mm-hmm. Did you see your dad at all?
Yeah, so we lived on my mom. We lived on the ranch with my mom for a week and then we went with my dad.
Oh, you still were doing that?
Yes, we were switching back and forth. Yeah.
Okay.
She started doing weird things. Like she wouldn't pick us up from school and we'd be there for like 2 hours. And then the school would call my mom's mom, my grandma, and tell her or my aunt or whoever. And they would come and pick us up. And my aunt told me how sometimes we'd be at her house until like 6 or 7. And my mom would be like, oh, like, sorry, I'm coming to get them. Like she would just kind of like forget about us and not come and get us. And then she wouldn't wake up to take us to school. And I climbed through her window. She locked her door. She would, like, crash a lot and, like, not wake up and lock her door. And so I climbed through her outside window and woke her up. And it was that same morning that she took us to school. And she drove a big truck. We were on the freeway. And a truck in front of us had dropped a box, like, the size of a refrigerator. And, I mean, we were all sitting in the back. I didn't see exactly what happened. But all I remember is she jerked the wheel. And we flipped, like, 5 times over the freeway, like, over the median onto the other side.
Like, onto oncoming traffic?
Onto oncoming traffic. And everyone stopped. And we landed upside down. And it was this huge, I don't know if I'm saying this right, F-350, is that?
Yeah,
like, I have no idea. Truck. Yeah. Maybe like, F-250. A big, like, truck. It was, like, she used it to, like, haul hay, like a ranch truck. And it was squished down, like, smaller than a car. That's how smashed down the car got from the crash.
Oh, my gosh.
It was, like, a miracle. None of us even had a scratch. And
that's crazy.
Luckily, a nurse was driving behind us and saw the whole thing and called. And so the ambulance and the police came, and they had to pry the car apart to get us out. And when we flipped, the median actually went through the truck, like, in between me and my brother. And so if I would have been, like, an inch to the left or right, it would have, like, hit us. So it was just, the whole thing was just a miracle. Like we were totally protected. So after that,
how old were you again when that
I was
happened?
In sixth grade.
Okay.
Yeah. So after that, I think that's when my grandparents, my mom's parents, realized that the kids are in danger. We need to do something. Like something's not right, you know?
Because they felt like she
because
was not
they felt
all
like
there.
She, when yeah, when they went and saw her after the crash, that she wasn't all there and that her reflexes weren't all there, that she totally could have just switched lanes, but she just kind of jerked the wheel, and a lot of factors that the police were saying that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
So my grandma came down to the ranch and she came to visit us and she got a strand of my mom's hair from her hairbrush and she brought it down to, you know, I don't know what it's called, the drug testing place.
Mm-hmm.
And they told her that she had the highest level of cocaine in her system that they've ever seen, that she had to have been using every 20 minutes to have had that much cocaine in her system. And so my grandparents didn't want to take us away from her. They wanted to give her a chance to go to rehab and you know, and change so we can still be in her life. They planned an intervention for her. They got all their money together, and they found a really great rehab place and had her bags all packed. And it was at my grandparents' house, and they got my mom to go there. And she walked in, and they were all sitting in a circle, and she saw the, you know, the man, the interventionist guy. And she realized what was happening, you know, immediately and said, I'm not doing this. F you guys, and walked out. So at that point, they had to make a really hard decision to take us away from her because if we lived with her, we weren't in a safe environment. So my grandma called the mediator, which is a guy that was like mediating the divorce and all of that. And she gave him the drug test and he called the judge. And within 10 minutes, the judge had called my dad and said, you have full custody of your kids. Police are bringing them to your house right now. So, and which I can't even imagine like being a parent, like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna have these 3 kids like all to myself, you know, and you're used to only having them like every other week.
Is that something that now, did your dad know that your mom had abused drugs before, or that was something he was shocked by? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't know, because I know that she started using after they got a divorce.
Okay.
So I don't know if, I mean, I would assume that he only knew once the judge had called him and told him, because I don't know how, they didn't really talk or anything. So I don't know how he would have known, but who knows. So at that point, we were living with my dad full time. And the judge gave my mom a choice and said, if you get drug tested every month, you can have 1 hour supervised visits with your kid, your kids once a week. So we did that for a few, I mean, only a couple times. And then she said, I don't want to do this anymore. So at that point, I can't remember how old I was. I was probably in like seventh grade or eighth grade. And she said, I don't want to do this anymore. So then I basically didn't see her till I was 18. I talked to her once in a while on the phone, but she was always, I couldn't understand her. She was always slurring her words. She's always drunk or something. So I felt like I wasn't really talking to her.
And where was she at this point?
So she was still living on the ranch.
Okay.
In Scottsdale, so like an hour away.
Yeah.
And we were in Mesa with my dad. And in between all of that, she had used all of her money from the divorce and everything to buy drugs. And she ran out of money. She lost the ranch. Between that time that I didn't talk to her was like a really hard time for us kids and for her. She was making like the worst decisions I feel like that she's made. So she lost the ranch. She would go and live in motels and she would prostitute herself for money. And she would have like random boyfriends just to like have a house to live at, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So between that time, like I said, it was also really hard for me because I don't know if I mentioned this before, but the reason my parents got divorced is because my dad was really abusive, physically and verbally. And my mom stayed with him for, I think it was like 15 years before she finally, you know, divorced him. And he was abusive to us as well. And so that was really hard for me to come to grips with, that she chose her addiction and left us with my dad, who she knew was like abusing us. So we lived with my dad that whole time. And
wait, did she ever like make attempts without the judge's approval to come see you? Was she ever like, oh, do you want me to come pick you up? Or
not that I can remember.
Okay.
She was always really out of it. Like anytime I talked to her, she would just be like rambling on, and I would just like, I would literally set the phone down on the table and just like do other things, because she would just talk and she would just keep talking. Like it's not like I had to respond to her. Mm-hmm. She was so on drugs and drinking. Yeah. Oh, and so since she ran out of money, she couldn't afford cocaine anymore. And so she resulted to drinking a lot. And then she became a really, like, she would drink breakfast, lunch, and dinner all the time. And she, throughout that time that I didn't see her, my grandparents had told me, you know, your mom's in the hospital. She was in and out of the hospital because her liver was like shutting down because she was drinking so much. I remember one time she passed out in like the parking lot or something, and someone called the police, you know. So random things like that. She was in and out of the hospital. So that's all I kind of heard about her, is that she was still doing it. And once I got older, I kind of realized I don't want to have a relationship with her because it was just harmful to me.
Yeah.
So I became more at peace about it.
So were you like always worried about her, or were you kind of just numb to it?
I feel like I was, I mean, she's my mom. So I always cared about her and loved her, and I was always worried about her. But in my mind, I always knew that she would probably die from this one day, because she never showed signs that she was going to overcome it or stop doing that. I felt like every single day I would sit in school. If I would ever get called to the office, I'd be like, my mom's dead. Like, they're calling me in the office to send me home to tell me that my mom died. And so that was always my thought. It's different than like having your own mom. Like, if your mom would die, it's a really sad, hard thing, you know? But with her, I felt like she wasn't, I mean, she's always my mom, but it wasn't the same dynamic as like someone else's mom. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So it would almost, in my mind, I always just told myself it's going to be the same once she dies, that if she's here, because we don't even talk anyways, and she'll be more at peace because she won't have her addiction. And I would always still, you know, try to like calm myself down and tell myself things like that. But what I feel like was the hardest thing is through those years, my dad was still abusive towards us. And those were some really dark times for me. He was so controlling and physically and mentally abusive, that if I did anything wrong that he didn't like, you know, my car's gone, my phone's gone, everything's gone, and I was locked in my room, and I just had to sit in my room. And I just felt so alone, and like I couldn't talk to anyone, and I felt threatened if I would talk to someone that he would, you know, do something. He would threaten us to not tell anyone. It happened so many times that I was just, I don't know how to explain it. My whole body was just numb. I just would rather not be there, like not be living anymore. And that was like a really, that was a really dark time for me, and I didn't even want to live anymore. My dad was a substance abuser also, and he took a lot of pills. And I think only my grandma knows this. I never shared it with anyone, but I tried to overdose on his pills one time, and obviously it didn't work. But I would also sit in my room and, like, it sounds so stupid now saying it, but I would, like, bang my head against my headboard. I just wanted to, like, hurt myself. I just didn't want to be here. I just felt so alone. Like, it was just a really hard time. It's hard because when someone tells you that you're worthless and that you don't mean anything and that you're fat and that you're stupid, so many times you start to believe it. And you just feel so alone. And, yeah, that was just a hard time.
Did it, like, bring you and your siblings closer? Because yeah. You were all going through it.
Yeah. I feel like it totally did. My sister's room was over on the other side of the house by my dad's room. And me and my brother had a room. Our rooms were right next to each other. And so we would all kind of, you know, when things would happen, my sister would come into my room or I would go into my brother's and we would just, like, cry together. I feel like going through something hard with anyone will bring you closer to them too. Because you have something you're relating in that way and going through it together.
Totally.
But I feel like what actually got me through that is I found an iPod Touch, like, in the bottom of my drawer. And I found out that you can download a texting app on there. And when I would always be locked in my room, I would just be sitting there, like, going crazy, you know. Because when you're a teenager, you don't have your phone. You're, like, going crazy.
Yeah.
So I found this iPod Touch, and I downloaded the texting app, and I could text my grandma. And I was super, super close to my grandma. She would pick us up every Sunday and take us to church. And she was like my mom. She was always there for us. And it was hard because she was kind of like on a line where she had to do what my dad wanted so that he doesn't say you can't see them anymore. But mm-hmm. then she also had to be there for us too and protect us. So I know that was really hard for my grandparents too.
And did she know about the abuse?
Yeah.
Okay.
She knew about it all.
I think that situation's common because I've even seen that with people I know where it's like the grandparent or someone wants to intervene with the grandchildren and like what the parents are doing, but it's like they know if they say something, then the parents going to be like, well, no, then you can't see them. And it's like, okay, well, I just have to keep my mouth shut and like just try. I can't imagine that as a grandparent, like trying to.
Because you know they're in a bad situation, but you can't do anything about
it.
And besides just love them and be there.
Yeah.
She lived like a mile away from us and I would run away to her house like all the time.
Was there a way that she could have proved it and then gotten custody or that wasn't?
That's the thing is my dad was very, very smart. He wouldn't hit us or do anything that would make a mark because – and he would say that to us. Like, you can't tell anyone because you don't have any bruises or you don't have this. Like, he would
like, – oh, like he knew what to do to hurt you to
– yeah. It's not like he would just, like, punch us in the face and we'd have, like, a black eye. Mm-hmm. Like, he would choke us or, like, pick us up by our necks and chuck us on the ground or, like, chuck us towards a wall. Things where it's not, like, physically on your body where you can see, like, bruises and bleeding. I remember one time he probably on accident. I mean, no, he did this on purpose, but in his mind it was an accident. He chucked something at my sister's face. And I think he was probably like, shoot, this is going to make a mark because this is the first time that he actually like threw something. My sister had a fat lip. He still sent us to school and told her to tell them that she, you know, fell or I don't know, something. The teacher realized that something was going on or they didn't think that that was the true story.
Mm-hmm.
And they called.
Well, kids aren't really good liars.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially my sister. She's. Yeah. Is it called CPS?
CPS.
And they came down to our school, and I think that was when I was in junior high. And they pulled us all into a room, and my dad had, like, called us. I think maybe on the office phone or maybe we had cell phones at the time. And he called us and said, you know, if you tell them anything, then this is going to happen. Like, threatened us not to say anything. So we all said that she fell and that it was not a big deal and nothing happened. And so I feel like I was so scared of him for so long that I didn't tell anyone. And I feel like that's where people are stuck in abusive relationships or or any type of relationship they're in that's abusive, people feel like they're stuck because they feel threatened, like they can't say anything. And I just wish that I would have. I wish I would have been strong enough to say anything. I mean, I was just a kid, but mm-hmm. I wish I could go back and tell myself now, like, it's okay. Like, you can tell someone about it. Like, tell someone you trust and get help because you're not stuck and you don't have to stay in that situation.
Yeah.
I was always really shy, I feel like, growing up. But going through the abuse, it made me, like, a different person. And now I feel like I'm more, like, I fight back more and I voice my opinion more because of it. Also another factor that helped me through all this is my dad wasn't really around. I mean, he was around, but he hired a nanny and she basically raised us. And she was like my second mom too. She's 37 now, so just like maybe like 15 years older. Or mm-hmm. I don't know how much older. I'm bad at math. But
I actually think that's spot on.
Yeah. So. I'm 23 and she's 37. Yeah. So, it was hard for her too because she couldn't say anything. She was working for my dad and she loved us like her own kids, but she was on that same balance because if she says something, she's going to get fired and mm-hmm. then she can't be there to protect us. But her and my grandma really helped me and got me through all this because they were always there for us. And her name is Crystal, our nanny. And she, if anything was going on and she could tell we weren't in a bad situation, she would like sleep over and she would sleep in my bed and sleep mm-hmm. with me. And she's the one who like saw me when I overdosed and was trying to tell my dad, we need to take her to the hospital to get her stomach pumped. And my dad said no, because then that looks bad on him. He didn't care if something was happening to me, because if we take him to the hospital, that looks bad on him because he had those pills and I got them and then he's a bad parent.
Mm-hmm.
So her and my grandma were a big factor that really got me through it. And I feel like having good friends, I didn't tell a lot of my friends everything, only a few of them, but a lot of them are just really in tune. I feel like when you have a best friend, they're in tune with your feelings and they know if something's going on. I just feel like having good friends really helps a lot too.
Yeah. And they don't even have to really say it. Like, yeah. They don't have to be like, oh, I know.
Just being there for you. Yeah. Yeah. So when I was a senior in high school, I finally decided that I'm going to stand up for myself and do something about it. I don't remember the situation. I know he was getting mad and I could tell something was about to happen. And I told him, hit me. I want you to hit me so then I can go and tell someone. I said, because I'm going to call the cops and I'm going to go over to the neighbors and I'm going to tell someone. Crystal, our nanny, her parents live two doors down from us. So I'm like, I'm going to go down to the Jensens, that's their last name, and I'm going to tell them. I'm going to do something about it. And at that point, he realized that I wasn't scared of like him threatening me, that I was actually going to tell someone. So I feel like at that point, he kind of realized that he can't hit us anymore. We're too old and we're going to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Like his power in that way is kind of gone.
Yeah. But then he still would do it verbally, which both of those types of abuse are bad. I mean, it depends on the person. But for me, verbal abuse was almost even harder because then it sticks with you. When people tell you something so many times, you believe it. And I don't know, it just ruins your thoughts about yourself. Like mm-hmm. you just feel so degraded, like you're worthless and that you are fat and you are stupid and no one cares about you. And when I would cry, he would laugh in my face, like just making you feel so like just such a small person, like nothing. That was almost harder, I feel like, for me to go through. That's when I was a senior. And so then when I graduated, I was 18. And that's when I could see my mom. But in my mind, I was like, I feel like I always had hope because I wanted her to get better, because I wanted to have one parent that was normal and that I could have a relationship with. And so I always like had hope, like she's going to change, like in the back of my mind. So when I was 18, I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to have a relationship with her. She was living at some friend's house in Scottsdale and they had a ranch too. She loves animals. She was a cowgirl. She rode horses and stuff. And so she lived on this ranch. I was driving a truck at the time. And so I would drive down there. It was like an hour. So it was like a lot of gas for a truck. And I would drive down there like a couple times a week. And then I started realizing what was happening. Like we would get our nails done and she would say she forgot her wallet. So I would pay. She would use me all the time to like move her stuff with my truck. Like I just realized that I was getting used and that she was still an alcoholic and still using drugs. And it just wasn't a good environment for me to be in. It wasn't a good relationship to have. So at that point, it was really hard, but I had to tell myself, I'm not going to have a relationship with my mom until she goes to rehab and changes, which I knew that wasn't going to happen. So I just kind of cut off contact with her. She called me once in a while and I just wouldn't go and see her. And a year and a half ago, I was in Colorado. I was snowboarding up there with some friends and my husband. And I got a call from like the doctor or nurse at a hospital. And they said, your mom put you and your brother and sister as her, like, medical, like, decision makers, I guess it is. And I hadn't talked to her in a while, you know, maybe a phone call once in a while. So I didn't know. I just knew she was still using. I didn't know what was actually going on. And they said she has cirrhosis of the liver, which means that your liver has completely shut down, which because she drinks so much alcohol. And they warned her so many times before that, that if she keeps drinking, that she's going to die because her liver is shutting down and she just couldn't stop. So they said, we are taking her off of life support and we need you to say that that's okay. Your brother and sister are here and they already said that that's okay. We just need you to say that that's okay too. And I said, you know, yeah, that's okay. And I had 2 more days of my trip and they told me that she wouldn't last through the night. And so it was an 8-hour drive home and I didn't want to like rush home and just see her there dying the last time I see her. So I realized I'm just going to go on with my trip the last 2 days. And we had friends there too. I'm not going to ruin everyone's trip and be like, hey, we're going home. So we had 2 more days there. We come home and she's in hospice care now. And hospice care is where you're there, but you're not hooked up to anything, any machines keeping you alive. You're just basically living there and nurses are taking care of you until you pass away. And she was still alive. And everyone was like shocked that she was still alive. And I go to hospice care and see her. And she, at that point, hadn't eaten or drinken anything for a week because she couldn't swallow it. It just seemed like she had already passed away. Like, she would lay there, her eyes were closed, and she wasn't moving. And she just looked not even the same. Like, she was probably 70 pounds. It just looked like a skeleton. Like, it was just her bones, basically. She was so thin. It was crazy. And she was just laying there, just, like, lifeless. I went and saw her a couple times. And I always kind of held anger against her for what she did in choosing her addiction and leaving us with our dad. I don't know what changed in me, but I knew that I needed to forgive her for what she's done, and I needed to ask her to forgive me for being so angry at her before she had passed. And so it was the day before she passed away, which obviously I didn't know she was going to die the next day. And I was in her room by herself, and I held her hand, and I just told her that I forgive her. And I asked her if she could forgive me too for being so angry at her. And she actually squeezed my hand and opened her eyes and looked at me. And I knew that she had heard me, even though she hadn't moved or anything since then. And the next day she passed away. And I feel like that was like a weight lifted off my shoulders. Like, I finally have forgiven my mom for everything that she's done. And I know that she forgave me for being so angry at her just by her like squeezing my hand and looking at me. I've been married since then. And so I haven't, well, we lived in my dad's guest house for the first 2 years, but my dad was always in Colorado. So we didn't really see him all the time. And it was fine. Since I've been married, he's been better because I have David there. It's not like he's going to do anything in front of my husband. But I just had to choose for myself what kind of relationship I was going to have with him. And so me and my husband decided that we were going to still have a relationship with him because he's my dad and I love him, but we have to have a distance relationship and we have to pick and choose when we're going to hang out with him and what vacations we're going to go on with him and just keep our distance, basically.
Have boundaries.
Yeah, have boundaries. So we lived in there for 2 years and then we bought our own house in Gilbert and now we live in Gilbert. And it's been really hard for me to forgive my dad as well. I haven't actually sat down and told my dad, like, I forgive you, which I don't feel like I need to because he's never said he was sorry for anything. He doesn't even own up to anything that he did. But I just have, for myself, told myself that I have forgiven him. And I feel like people who know about what he's done are confused. Like, how do you still have a relationship with him? It's because he's my dad and I love him. And forgiveness is a huge thing. You have to forgive people who wronged you or you're just living a sad life, like being mad and hating so many people if you're not forgiving everyone. But that doesn't mean you have to trust them fully. I don't trust my dad fully. I still put boundaries in between, but since I'm an adult now and I'm married, he knows the boundaries and knows that he can't treat me like that. There is an instance before we moved out of the guest house, I don't get into all the details, but this thing happened. I was supposed to take him somewhere and I didn't know I was supposed to, and he got mad at me and he was like cussing me out in my face, like had his middle fingers like an inch away from my face, screaming, saying every cuss word ever, like screaming in my face. And at that point I told him, like, we're setting boundaries. I'm a married woman and you're screaming at me in my face. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not okay. So at that point, that's when me and David started looking for houses, and we moved out. And now his and my relationship is a lot better because we have that separation. And I just know that that's just how it's going to be. That's how our relationship is going to be, is that we're going to have to set boundaries.
Yeah. I've heard like that quote. I'm probably going to butcher it every time I try and say a quote or anything. But it's like forgiveness or like holding grudges is like drinking a cup of poison and hoping the other person dies.
Yeah.
Because it's like to them, he probably, I mean, like, I don't know, but the other person's probably living fine. Like, they probably feel a little guilty, but you're the person that's holding on to that, and you're the person that's suffering the most from it.
Yeah. Yeah, it hurts yourself more. Mm-hmm. Like, holding grudges totally ruins yourself more than the other person.
Because of the abuse, do you feel like it was hard for you to trust David, your husband? Like, was that, do you feel like it's affected your relationship with him or your marriage?
So when we were dating, you know, I had told him everything that's gone on, which I haven't been open. I've been more open about my mom's situation than I had with my dad because I was always scared to talk about it. But I opened up to David and told him everything. And I said, we were getting more serious and talking about marriage. And I said, I just want you to know everything and know that you're not going to have great in-laws, like a mother-in-law and a father-in-law, you know. Yeah. And I want you to know that before you marry me, and want you to be okay with that. And want you to know that you have to be patient with me, that I've gone through a lot. And David's never given me a reason not to trust him. And so I always had, I feel like. But I feel like no matter what, if you've been through abuse or been through hard trials, whatever that trial is still sticks with you and it affects your life. Mm-hmm. But it's the way that you choose to go about it or choose to deal with it is what really matters. And so I just, I feel like I do have trust issues. But David's always made me feel really safe and made me feel like I can talk to him about anything. And so I don't feel like I have trust issues with him at all. Yeah, it's helped a lot because his family, I have the best in-laws ever. Like, they're amazing. I mean, my mom's side of the family is amazing too. And they've shown me like what a normal family looks like too. But just being married into a great family has just been amazing. It's been like life-changing. Just seeing how they all love each other and how we all do things together and how close they are. And his sisters and his mom are always so nice to me. Like, I feel like they're my sisters and my mom. Mm-hmm. And so that's helped a lot, is seeing something normal, you know?
Yeah. And being a part of it.
Yeah, being a part of something normal. Yeah.
So how did your siblings kind of deal with it? Like, were you guys all kind of dealing with it in the same way?
Because
even when we talked to Abby before, like, she seems very strong.
Yeah.
And just, like, so with it. Like, I feel like you just have it together. Like, are your siblings similar? No. Are your siblings kind of the same, or did they have harder times with it? I mean, you don't have to expose them.
Yeah, speak for them. But
yeah, that's what I was going to say, is it's hard to speak for them because you never really know how someone's feeling or what they're going through, because I feel like people can say something, but you don't really know because only they know. But just from an outside perspective, what I could tell is we all took it very differently.
Yeah.
My brother and sister are very positive people. Like, especially my brother, I feel like life's going to be okay. Everything's fine. Mm-hmm. And he kind of just avoided my dad and just kind of, what's that word? Succumbed in? What is that?
Oh, like, succumbed.
Yeah, to him, so that he didn't have to deal with the confrontation or anything. Like, he would let my dad do his thing and
just avoid it.
Yeah, kind of avoid it. And my dad masked what he did because he had money and he would buy us phones and cars and take us on trips. And I feel like that's important to you when you're in high school, is having the cutest clothes and having an iPhone or whatever. And my brother, that was important to him. And he wanted to be able to go snowboarding, go wakeboarding all the time and do all those things. And so he just, I feel like he kind of just held it all inside, which I feel like he still does hold it inside because he didn't want to deal with the confrontation. And then my sister, she was so young when it all happened that I feel like it probably hurt her the most, maybe, because she didn't understand what was going on. And she was always confused why no one would tell her what was going on. It's because she was so young, we didn't want to tell her everything and get her exposed to all of that.
Yeah.
So I feel like she was just confused all the time why no one would tell her, why she wasn't involved. But I mean, my dad did abuse her too. And I feel like we all were affected in different ways, and it's hard to say.
Like, you've all taken it differently.
Yeah, we've all taken it differently. My sister is she'll do anything for anyone. She's so sweet. I feel like how she coped with it is she would go in these like imaginary worlds. Like she would act like she was a horse and like go and run around and be a horse and live in this fantasy world because she wanted to be in that life and not what was actually happening. So I feel like that's how she dealt with it, is she acted like it wasn't happening and like made her own life that this is what was happening. Like I remember in school one time, someone came up to me and was like, your sister told me that you guys have, I can't remember how many it was, like 20 cats. Like, she makes things up. Like, this is my life because this is what's happening. So I'm going to make up this new life that's actually, like, that's better.
That I want.
That I want. Aww. And she loved animals. Like, when we lived on the ranch, we rode horses. We were in horse shows. Like, we were.
Oh, my gosh.
She was way more into it than I was. And she still loves animals. But at my dad's house, she would find, like, wounded birds in the backyard and take them in her room. And I feel like that distracted her, too. She would feed stray cats, and they would come. She'd, like, hide them under her bed when my dad would walk in.
Oh, my gosh.
But I feel like those are her friends. Like, that's how she coped with it. And
when she's Snow White.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, she.
Or is that Snow White that talks to the animals?
Oh, Cinderella, I think.
Cinderella.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. They all do. Cinderella. Let's be real.
But, yeah, I feel like that's how she coped with it, is kind of saying that it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just everyone's so different.
And she always had a lot of hope too. Like she would text my mom the most and want to see my mom the most and was confused why she couldn't, because she didn't understand the full story. So I feel like that was hard for her. Like when my mom passed away, she still would say that my mom is her best friend, and because that's what she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you want something, you tell yourself that that's what it is. And so that's what it is in her mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, man. So what would you say is, like, the most positive attribute about yourself now that you got from your childhood and all of those experiences?
Oh, man. It's, like, weird talking about yourself. Like,
I know.
I'm great because.
Well, I mean, like, something you've noticed that, like, maybe you didn't have when you were younger, but now you're, like, I'm really glad that I got this out of it.
I think strength. Mm-hmm. Because when I was younger, I was super just shy and quiet. Like I sucked my thumb till I was like 10 because I just sat there and sucked my thumb, and that's what soothed me. And my brother and sister would be running around and they would do something wrong and they'd be like, Abby did it, you know, and everyone knew I didn't do it. Like I remember reading in my mom's journal after she passed away, and she said that she went in to check on me because I hadn't cried all night and I was a baby, and that I was like white and I had the highest temperature, and I can't remember what little the babies get, the disease or whatever they get. I had like, what is it when your skin like turns yellow, I think?
Oh, jaundice?
Something like that. Yeah, she said that she had something and she was just like, you didn't cry all night. I feel like I learned from a young age to take care of myself, and which is a bad thing and good thing because I held all my feelings in.
Mm-hmm.
But now what I've realized is that it's okay to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone that has been through anything, any trials in their life, whether it be addiction, abuse, whatever, that it's okay to talk about it, that when you talk about it, it can help other people. Mm-hmm. And not to be scared and not feel like you're stuck.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And that's something that we've learned too on just like by having this podcast. Whenever we're vulnerable or whenever our guests are vulnerable, we just get an overwhelming amount of messages that are like, oh my gosh, this helped me so much. And there's so much power in being vulnerable because everyone's fighting their own battles. And I think that we're all more similar than we think, you know?
Yeah, and it's not even that we give them a solution either. It's like, this is how you fix it. It's just like to feel that you're not alone.
Because I'm sure that's what you said. Like, I just felt so alone.
Yeah.
Like, you probably thought you were the only one
going
through that.
And that's why I wanted to finally – I've never talked about this before. And that's why I finally was open to talking about it, because I wished that someone else would have said, I've gone through this too, and I'm here for you. Because it's easy for people to say, you know, I'm sorry you're going through this, I'm here for you, but they haven't actually gone through that.
Yeah.
But for someone to say that I've gone through exactly what you've gone through or something similar, it helps relate more.
And
helps you feel like there is hope. I feel like people think that when they go through trials, they have to get down and they have to go and, okay, poor me, I'm going to make bad decisions now because I've gone through this hard thing. It's my whole motto, I feel like. Yeah. My whole motto was like, I'm going to be the opposite of what my parents were.
It's interesting because I feel like a lot of times people either turn out exactly like their parents or the opposite. People who have gone through, you know, they've had these hard relationships with their parents or their parents have made poor decisions and they're like, okay, like you said, I'm going to be the opposite of that. That is the last thing I want for my life. But then other people, because it's all they know,
they continue the cycle.
Yeah, they continue the cycle. And so I feel like it's rarely in between. It's either like, okay, I'm going to be the opposite, or I'm the same as them.
Yeah.
Whether they know it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and everyone has different situations, even with like abuse and
you know, parents who are abusing substances or whatnot. It's like everyone has different variations of it. Mm-hmm. Like you had both. Some people just have one. Some people, I don't know. It's so crazy. But I think in general, you can feel so alone because of your situation being so unique. But feelings and like the emotions overall are common.
Are
like,
similar.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know feeling if that even made sense.
Feeling alone. Or
yeah,
feeling
like you're the only one that's going through something like that.
Like other people are going through that too.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's how I mentioned earlier how I owned the clothing company. It's called Shop Fidelity. After my mom passed away, I wanted to help people who are going through addictions because the person who is addicted is not only – it's not only affecting them, it's affecting everyone around them. And so I felt like if I could at least – help in some little way that it could change their kids' lives and their parents' lives or anyone around them and mm-hmm. as well as their life. And so I went around and found a lot of different rehab facilities. And the one that really stuck out to me that I loved the most is called NCADD, and it's in Phoenix. And I donate 10% of each of my purchases to that rehab facility. And they are amazing. Like, I went down there before I decided to donate to them. And you could just tell that they're just a genuine, you know, place. Yeah, organization. The women actually live there. They have, like, little houses for them. And it's women that have kids. And the kids live there with them as well. And that's what really stuck out to me is because I want to help them so their kids don't have to go through what I went through.
Yeah, it's like the trickle.
Yeah, effect. I want them to be able to have a relationship with their mom or their parents or whoever it is. And I want their parent to be able to get through that addiction so they can have that relationship with their kid. And it was really cool. The first time I went there, me and my husband, and we talked to, I can't remember her name, one of the women who is there. Mm-hmm. And she'd been there, I think she said, for 2 years at that point. I think you can be there for like a max of like 4 years. And they're like, okay, spread your wings and go off, you know. Mm-hmm. And she was telling us her story, how she was raised in a family where every other family was having dinners together and they would be shooting up heroin. That was normal. Her parents would be doing that and they're like, here, this is normal, do this. So she didn't have a choice. That's what she was like put into. So she got addicted to heroin right away. I think she said she started when she was like 12.
Oh my gosh.
And she got addicted right away, you know, not even her choosing. Some people don't choose that. That's what their life is. It just happens. And she just made really bad decisions, was prostituting herself, and that's how she got pregnant. And so she obviously didn't know who the dad was. And once she got pregnant, that's when she realized that she didn't want her kid to be raised how she was. And so mm-hmm. she, on her own, sought out this rehab facility and found it. And she has been clean for however long she's been in there. I think it was around 2 years. Most of the women going in there had not even gone to high school. So they don't know how to like read or write or do dishes or make mac and cheese. You know, they don't know how to do anything. And they have kids. And so they teach them the basic things. They teach them how to read and write, and they get them their GED. And she got her GED, and she showed us her little house that she's living in. She has it framed on her wall because she's, like, so proud of it.
Aww.
And it was just so amazing to see that she overcame that addiction for her kids. Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, she's so stoked about her GED. And now she's going to college.
Yeah.
And she's just doing amazing things. And so I know that me donating isn't making them do that. But I just wanted to help out in any way that I could.
Yeah.
And I wanted, and I hoped that my donations could help a little bit to
contribute,
help their,
contribute
mm-hmm. and help their kids get Christmas presents or help them get food every week or, you know.
Yeah. I feel like the businesses and the shops and the things that are the most successful is when the person behind it is passionate about it and has a reason. It's just cool to me that you took that and you can donate and contribute because that shows that you're passionate and you like have this reason for it. And that's so much more than just like, oh, I just want to make money, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Sorry, I'm like backtracking a little bit, but I was just curious. Did you ever have a conversation with your mom about addiction? Like, did she, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah. Admit, yes, I have this problem and I'm trying to stop. Or was it never? She just was so far.
No, I don't know if you have ever known an addict or anything, but I feel like when you're addicted to something, it has control over you and you're not even yourself anymore.
Yeah.
Like I remember her from when I was younger and she was an amazing mom. She was beautiful. She was intelligent. She was amazing. And she was just a completely different person after she started using the drugs because it's not, you're not even talking to them. You're talking to the drugs and the alcohol. So, and it has such control over you. And I feel like most of the time it makes you think that you're doing something right. Like the substance is controlling you because it wants you to, your body wants to keep taking it because it's so addicted to it. Mm-hmm. And so she never admitted that she had something wrong with her. She always, you know, yeah, it's not that big of a deal. It's not that, like, I can't remember exactly how she would say, but no, she never admitted like, yeah, I'm doing this and I'm trying to get help. Mm-hmm. We would say something and she would say, no, that's not. Just like when she, I feel like this kind of like describes what her attitude was about it. Just like when she walked into the intervention and she said, I'm not doing this. I don't have a problem. F you guys. That was her mentality because it wasn't her speaking. It was the drugs and the alcohol.
Yeah. Do you feel like going through all of this has made you much more empathetic towards other people who also go through trials? Because I know we talked earlier and you said, like, it's not an excuse. Like, no matter what you go through, you know, you don't have to turn to that. But like you also said, there's people who are just born into that. They almost don't have a choice. But do you feel like your life has made you more empathetic of people?
Yeah, it's made me more aware because I wish that more people were like, even though I didn't speak it when I was younger, I'd wish that more people were like aware and could, I just wish people could read my mind and know what I was like going through and be like, it's okay, you know? So, yeah.
Or I feel even like, educated enough to see signs or some kind of thing to kind of know.
Yeah. So, yeah, on one hand, I feel like it has made me more like empathetic towards people going through trials or whether it be abuse or anything, you know? But what I said earlier, is I was telling them how my dad abused my mom for so long and then they got a divorce and then she started using. But in my head, I always thought, yeah, that abuse probably put her in such a bad place where she felt like that was going to be my escape. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the point that I said earlier is when you're in such a low point and you're going through such a hard trial, to not turn to something like that to make it better, to turn to good friends, to turn to family.
Or even just believing in God and like
having faith. Positive vices, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Having something more positive than turning to something more negative and becoming more like that person, like going down to their level. I don't know. I feel like a lot of people say, I've been through this and that's why I do this, you know? Like that's why I'm making this choice is because this happened to me. And everyone's situation is different. But for me, I just feel like I went through these things and I'm not going to make excuses and say I'm doing these actions because I went through this, because my mom was an addict and my dad abused me. I'm going to say my dad and my mom made bad decisions that affected my life, but I'm going to choose to turn it into something positive and I'm going to have the opposite life. And I'm married to an amazing man and have a great life now and have a great family and I have this amazing business and have amazing opportunities. And I want people to know that you can make a positive decision out of it instead of going down
that lower. You have agency to pick.
Yeah.
That you're not just destined to do that. Yeah. To do something bad instead.
What would be your best advice to someone who maybe is going through something similar, who has gone through abuse or addiction or anything like that, who would maybe be in your shoes? I know you mentioned maybe just like speaking out.
Yeah.
Is that something that...
Yeah, I would say I was so scared for so long. I mean, I guess I'll kind of touch on both of them separately, but with abuse, I was so scared for so long to say something because the person that's abusing you most of the time threatens, like, if you tell anyone, this is going to happen. Whether it be if you're in an abusive situation with a spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend or a parent, you know, whatever the abusive situation may be, to tell someone you trust and get help because you're not stuck in that situation. You don't have to say, well, this is my life, so this is what it's going to be, you know? Mm-hmm. You can change your life. You don't have to be in that situation. So I would say to tell someone you trust and get help and not be afraid because they're only threatening you. Mm-hmm. I mean, words only say so much. Once you get help and you get away from them, there's not much that they can do. And then on the other hand, if whether you're struggling with addiction or you know someone who is, if you're struggling with addiction, to realize that it's hurting you and everyone else around you. So anyone you come in contact with, it's hurting them as well. And I feel like that should be reason enough to want to get help and to want to have a better life. I feel like you never hear of people who are addicts that have this amazing life, you know? So I know I've never been addicted to anything, but just seeing my mom go through it, I know that it has such power over you that it almost seems impossible. But also to tell someone you trust, just like the abuse situation, and to get help and to go through that, not only for you, but if you have kids or a family or anyone else, because it's affecting their lives as well.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, if you know someone who is going through abuse to do the same thing as well, is to try to have an intervention.
You
try
mean
to
addiction?
Yeah,
sorry.
Or addiction. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
You're good.
Try to have an intervention. Try to get them help and talk to them and get them into rehab, because you're not only helping them, you're helping everyone else that is affected by it too. Yeah.
And it's hard, because we've said this before, but it's so hard to try to change someone.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's impossible.
Yeah, actually. It's impossible. And it's like, you don't, it's such a frustrating thing.
Yeah, because you can't change someone. They can only change themselves. So you can only be so positive, such a positive influence, and say whatever you want to them. But in the end, they're going to choose.
Yeah.
What
and ultimately,
they want.
Yeah, exactly. Ultimately, they're going to make the decision of whether they're going to get better or not. And it's like, whatever, any kind of vice or addiction is an escape from something. So it's like, it's just a band-aid for whatever is like going on within them. And I just don't think some people, I don't know what it is. I like whether they're not educated enough about it, or like they just aren't aware that that's what it is.
Yeah.
But
no one chooses addiction for fun.
Yeah. Like,
well, I mean, maybe, but for the most part, it's, do you know what I mean? It's because
it happens because of something.
It happens because, something within them. They're battling their own demons. And they.
Yeah. And it's hard for them to realize that that's what it is.
Yeah.
Especially because they're taking something that's altering their reality. Yeah. So it's just. Yeah, it's just frustrating, and I think addiction is just such a really frustrating thing, I think, is
for the addict and for the people
for everyone
all
around
them.
Yeah. It's like prison.
I feel like it's going through all this has made me, how you said, has it made you more empathetic towards people, to touch on that again. You never know what anyone's going through. People have made such a difference in my life throughout high school that didn't even know what I was going through. There was this guy. We never liked each other or anything. We were just really good friends. And he had no idea. You know, I was not open about it. Like I said, I had like a group of like five best friends and only like one of them knew. He had no idea what was going on. I can't remember the exact things that he would do, but he would always make me feel included. He would always text me and say, hey, we're doing this. I'll pick you up. Let's go do this. Or just always being so nice to me, giving me compliments. And like I said, it wasn't a romantic thing. We never liked each other, but he was just a good friend and always there for me. And I just feel like you never know what anyone's going through, but him doing that made me feel like I had a purpose and made me feel like people wanted me to be there. Mm-hmm. And so that ultimately made me feel like, okay, I don't want to take my life. Other people want me to be here, you know? And so you never know, just to be nice to everyone, and because you never know what they're going through.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so true.
Yeah.
I know. And finding out times on this, like even giving someone a compliment.
Yeah.
Like when you're like, it's like kind of awkward to just like be like, hey, you look cute, or oh, I really like this about you, or something. It kind of feels awkward to say it. But when you say it, it's like, what is the worst case scenario after you say that?
And I feel like I try to like go out of my way now to do that because I know what little things can make a difference.
Yeah.
Even just, like you said, just saying, you look really pretty today, you know, can make someone's day. And you never know if someone is suicidal and they were thinking after school they were going to go and kill themselves, and you told them that they were pretty and that they mattered, and that was the reason that they didn't.
Or even asking someone, especially in high school, I think, like, even asking someone, inviting someone somewhere, it's like, you don't, inviting them to come doesn't mean you have to. I think sometimes people or kids think if you invite them, you have to stick with them the entire time.
Be like BFFs with them.
Like, just invite them, just be like, hey, we want you to come, and then if they want to come, it's like,
yeah,
that's fine. They can come, and probably they won't even come. But knowing that people want them around can mean so much to kids, I think, especially in high school and
just,
junior high.
Just being a friend to everyone.
Oh, I'm like
feeling the feels.
I'm feeling the feels. I'm feeling the love. Okay, so your shop, you were nice enough to give the listeners a little discount.
Yes.
So 15% off. On your site, which is what?
It's shopfidelity.co. Not .com because that was taken.
Dang.
Oh, no.
So I did .co.
Okay. Yes. So shopfidelity.co. She has the cutest dresses. And you have jumpsuits.
Yes.
Because I have one of those.
Yes. And I'm actually adding I wanted to start smaller and do just dresses. Then I added jumpsuits. And our next release, we're going to add some tops, too.
Cute.
Yeah.
Cute.
So they have some really cute stuff. And the discount code is going to be what we said.
Yeah.
So it's for all you guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lucky listeners.
The lucky listeners at home.
Well, thank you so much, Abby, being brave and vulnerable. My voice is so shaky because I've been crying. But I know it takes a lot to, like, share this kind of stuff. And
put it out into the world.
Put it out there.
Well, not that the whole entire world listens to our podcast. Like, put it out for the millions of fans.
But anyway, we really appreciate it. Yeah. And we know that that's hard, especially because you haven't been super open about it in the past. So we appreciate you.
Yeah, we
and
do. Thank you.
We're really grateful that you came on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say, Chels?
No, I think you summed it up. Honestly, whenever, like, I just get silent because I'm so into the story.
I know, I say, like, three words when we have guests.
Yeah, and I'm just, and then it's, like, over, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. I feel like I was listening to the podcast and not, like, actually on it.
Yeah.
So, you are a very good storyteller. And like I said, like, she is so strong. Like, even.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I just feel like you have your shit together.
I feel like.
Bleep it out.
I feel like that has been also one of my mottos is, like, going through trials makes you stronger.
Yes.
Like, it really does, which sounds so cliche, but it does. Like, you go through something hard and you take something better out of it. You get a lesson out of it, and you can put that into your life and, like, build up your portfolio or say, you know, through all the trials you've been through, and take out the good things through those, what you've learned through those trials, and make yourself a better person through them. So I feel like, I have gotten a lot stronger through going through that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You don't have to be a victim and say why me and poor me.
Yeah,
you know,
you
can make something good out of it.
Definitely. And I think that's awesome. Basically the motto of this podcast.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks so much for listening, guys. If you want to check us out on Instagram or on any social media site, we are there at What We Said Podcast. And then you guys can email us if you want to send us a story, send us a comment, anything.
Topic suggestions.
Yeah. At hello@whatwesaidpodcast.com or DM us. Either works. But thanks so much for listening, guys. And
that's what we said.
Bye, guys.
Yeah.